Welcome to another Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast. I'm Steve Larson, musical director, and we welcome today Jesse Parker to do a podcast about Brahms' Requiem. Jesse is a fairly new arrival in Rockford, been about 5 years, is it?
Seven,
okay. Time goes by. He got his doctorate in piano at Stanford, and then taught there for a while, taught at the University of Santa Clara, and then at the University of Texas in Austin before retiring and coming to grace our community with his presence, which we're grateful for. Now, he's going to talk about Brahms' Requiem. He's going to play some examples and set you up to understanding this piece a little bit better. And you don't need the understanding to love Brahms' Requiem, but boy, if you do, it gets all that much more amazing. Jesse.
Thank you. Where to begin? It's such a piece that has to be talked about in so many different ways, but I'm going to concentrate on one thing, and to do that justice, I have to start in the 13th century with music and give you an idea of what Brahms learned from his predecessors and from the way composers composed music. And that is with the inherent curiosity of humans. Temporal curiosity about time. Do we go forward? Can we go backward? Visual curiosity. What's that I see in the water? Oh, it's me. But wait a minute, am I upside down? Can I go upside down as well as right side up? And this curiosity is melded to the creative spirit. This is part of humankind. The quest to find out, once we make sounds, what can we do with those sounds? Can we manipulate them? Can we do what goes up, goes down? What goes forward in time, can that go back in time? And this was already in practice in the 13th century, which means that it probably was in practice for many generations before that. In the 13th century, some clausulas or some pieces of music were written, which basically went backwards. Now, what does it mean to go backwards? Well, if I do this on the keyboard, going backwards would simply be, and if I go, and then I decide to go, why, that's upside down. And of course, whatever goes upside down can be reversed and sung or played backwards as well. And a very simple example of this is Bach's two-part invention, which everyone who studies piano knows. It starts this way. So, just a little later in the piece, we hear this. Well, what is that? Believe it or not, if the student turns his music upside down and is asked to play that, this becomes this. So obviously, Bach, by the time that period came to pass, was doing all kinds of musical tricks of inversion, upside down, backwards, and things like palindromes, like Madam, I'm Adam, which backwards is the same thing. And this penchant for playing with sound and realizing all of the possibilities, by the time it reached Brahms, he was into it. He was really doing this. And particularly in the Requiem, there's no question about it. So, To begin, I'd like to just play that wonderful theme in the fourth section, How Lovely Is Thy Dwelling Place. It's in a waltz tempo, it's in three-quarter time. And then I'd like to play, just in the prior movement, something in kind of a march tempo that is the beginning of a great fugue. Now, what does this have to do with this? Can you hear it? They're both the same. But one is in three-quarter time, it's a lovely waltz. The other is in duple or four-four time. It's like a march. And the words are accented differently, so that one can see that even in speech, a parent scolding a child will say, "Don't you do that." Or they might say, "Don't you do that." And this is precisely the wonder of language and poetry and music, which Brahms is combining. And in this context, do we hear this similarity between those two themes, or do we not? And the question arises, did Brahms really calculate this, or did he not? I'll leave that up to the listener and to the musician who studies this piece. But obviously, these are the factors that are going to unify this wonderful, wonderful piece of heavenly length, the Brahms Requiem. So where does that theme come from? Well, the Brahms Requiem begins with an introduction by the orchestra. And by the way, notice the first violins aren't playing. They're silent. That's unusual. It's a very dark beginning. And it's a wonderful beginning. And finally, and I'll get back to that beginning in just a moment, but finally, the chorus enters with Blessed Are, Selig Sind. Well, those three notes . Did you recognize them? I'm going to play the wonderful How Lovely Are Thy Tabernacles, O Lord. Wow. So, this is the theme, three-note theme, that Brahms uses throughout the Requiem to unify and to dramatically differentiate the emotions of this Requiem, which run from grief, sorrow, to comfort, from pain to resolution. And yet, these are the melodic fragments that unify this piece. Now, there's one more source. There may be more, but there is one more major source for Brahms for this Requiem. It is hinted on in this wonderful beginning with a kind of a heart pulse in the bass. Wonderful figure that basically just steps up and steps down again. In a way, the figure itself is a three-note ascending scale, and then the reverse. And then later on, in the great second movement of this composition, the choir comes in, "All flesh is like grass." A very funereal section in three. Two, three. And if I'm not mistaken, the timpani has triplets in the third beat. Does that triplet figure ring a bell? It's Beethoven's fate motif. And all of this with this agricultural theme. All flesh is grass. And the nobility of man is like the grass blooming? Huh. So, where does this theme come in? And this is the same as the introduction. I'm now going to play a Lutheran hymn by Neumark. And later on, by the way, this hymn was used by Bach in a few cantatas, and it's basically one of Brahms' sources. At least most musicians, students of history, music history, believe that that was so. And there is some actual written documentation in terms of letters to Clara Schumann and others that this basically was a piece that inspired Brahms. He was familiar, of course, being a North German, with the Protestant hymns, and he was incredibly well-versed in the music of J.S. Bach. He actually subscribed to the entire edition. And as a young pianist, and as a conductor, he had directed so many compositions by Bach. Brahms was a contrapuntalist. And so this idea, upside down, backwards, and augmentation, that is, rather than just play something at one speed, all of a sudden, it's stretched out. Or, if it's stretched out to begin with, then it's speeded up. All of these options are there, and all of these techniques are found in this wonderful requiem. Now, just to basically give you a flavor of some of the wonderful music in the different sections, I'd like to go back again to the second movement. And it begins in a rather hushed tone like this. All right. Well, let's look at what's happening up on top here. Does that sound familiar? It really should, because if you play that backwards, it's our Zelig synth. just a little touch to let you know that all of this is happening. And yet it seems so natural. And it is. And this is the wonderful thing about a great composition. It's almost like a great performance. He, she makes it look easy. If it's labored, if it's kind of just calculated and nothing else, it's going to show. So the absolute profound beauty of this composition and what Brahms is doing, it's just amazing. We go on to the next movement, and basically, it's a baritone or bass solo. The baritone sings, Herr, lehre mir doch mich, dass ein Ende mit mir haben muss. Oh, Lord, teach me, what's my end going to be like? And basically, if you look at that, recognize those three notes again? And then it backtracks. And we have what is known as a chain. The same idea continues, only it's this time. What's that? Well, that's just upside down. That's just an inversion. Do we necessarily hear this if we're not trained musicians, or even if we are trained musicians? Do we hear this? Well, probably not. But the fact is, it reaches us somewhere. And then when we discover how Brahms creates from these basic schemes and what he does to it, it just dazzles. It absolutely dazzles. Das ein Ende. And this is almost like a march. So, it's the same body in different clothing. It's constantly changing, and considering the fact that we're coming on Halloween, this is something to really consider. And then, after asking all of these questions, Wes soll ich mich trösten? How shall I be comforted? And there is in the same movement, near the end, this wonderful chord. Obviously, if you stop there, you know you haven't gone anywhere. It's got to be resolved. This is what's known as a diminished chord. And the beauty of a diminished chord is that it can be resolved four different ways. It is so kind of uncertain. And that's the beauty of this uncertainty. What's happening? What is my life about? Where is this going? And all of a sudden, it's answered by the orchestra, and then the men's voices singing very low. And this builds. But before we build it, what is that? I hope. All of a sudden, this optimism. And what is that theme? Recognize it? That's the same. But in a totally, totally different transitional way from grief, from uncertainty, to optimism. And Brahms captures this language in a musical fashion. It's just amazing. And then this builds. into this wonderful fugue that I played in the beginning there. And it ends on this wonderful optimistic note, which is then followed by the centerpiece, the fourth movement, How Lovely Is Thy Dwelling Place. Now, to go beyond that, I just want to suggest a few more sections and what is happening in them. Basically, there is a section that is asking, Death, where is thy sting? Hell, where is your victory? And it's rather angry with all kinds of bass running all over the place. And it's told, wo is dein Falle? Told, wo is dein Stachel? Death, where is thy sting? Told, wo is dein Stachel? What is that? Does that sound like anything? Well, it, believe it or not, if you slow that down and give it a rather pastoral setting, you have our opening theme. But here it's... wonderful. All of a sudden, it's used for anger, for yelling out in frustration. And Brahms chose his words, the libretto, very carefully. By the way, just aside, this is not the usual kind of requiem. It's more of a humanistic requiem. And as a matter of fact, Brahms even said, ein menschliches requiem. He thought it might be just as well called a human requiem. And then finally, two wonderful fugues. Herr, du bist würdig zu nehmen Preis und Ehre. Wonderful, wonderful double fugue. He wasn't interested in just one subject, obviously, he had to have two. Where does this all come from? Herr, du bist. Let me play that backwards. Wow, it's the same theme. And zu nehmen. Well, no one, I believe, could say, hey, that's a retrograde inversion. But it is. It's backwards and it's upside down. It's the same theme. And then finally, in the last movement, he returns to the whole idea of blessed. And actually, the whole arch of these seven pieces with this wonderful waltz as the centerpiece, movement four, the whole requiem is a great architectonic arch. It starts in F. And it ends in F. And especially when you compare the last part of the first movement and the last part of the second movement, you see he's really ending like he began. It begins in the soprano, Selig. Yes, that's how long it is. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, just the skies open up. It's a wonderful, wonderful theme, beautifully accompanied by the orchestra. And again, these chains of our basic upside down, our regular theme, and it ends. Now, I want to basically stop for a moment because for my book, there is one more theme or one more element that Brahms uses again for special effects, and it's this. Which is basically the same three notes, only in a different order. That's the Zelig Synth. Now, where does he use this? Well, believe it or not, one of the first places that you can hear that is in that wonderful Halblich Sing deine Wohnungen, basically. And it's sung in various parts. Where does that come from? Let's see. It's a lullaby. It's a very comforting lullaby. And Brahms, in his intermezzo for these wonderful short pieces written near the end of his life, Sein Schlaf, mein Kind. It's actually, the German is there, it's basically a lullaby. The place. There it is in another intermezzo. And he uses this comforting theme in the great movement with the soprano solo. Not only does he use it, but he uses it at different speeds. And at the same time as the soprano, Ich will euch wiedersehen. I will see you again. Ich will euch wiedersehen. And the tenor at the same time is singing. It's just incredible how he uses this idea of speed, relative speed, at the same time, and he does this many times in this piece. And this idea finally has its wonderful application at the very end. Zelig sind die Toten. Before this, in the beginning, it wasn't blessed are the dead, it was blessed are us. Now, it's blessed are the dead. Finally, from the human requiem comes, in a sense, an acknowledgement at the end. Blessed are the dead as well. The beginning, blessed are those who grieve, the mourners, us, the living. And now, blessed are the dead. And now comes von nun on, forever, from now on. And it's just and that's the shading of found in basically, this is heard throughout this wonderful, wonderful final piece. And the piece ends, as I said, in a way like the first piece ended. And of course, let's not forget is basically the original Upside Down. And it ends in the key that it began, F major, concluding this arch. There is so much about this piece, Brahms' rhythmic devices, his sense of the text, his harmonic progressions, his orchestration. It just doesn't stop, but I will. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Jesse. And I want to add that Jesse and his wife are also singing in the chorus.
We are.
In this concert.
So we are.
Welcome you for that, and thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.